Blog Talk Radio. Everyone, this is Marty Oakley of the PPJ Gazette Online, and this is the TS Radio Network. It's August 6th, 2020, and things roll on. They just don't seem to change no matter how hard we try, but we're going to keep trying anyway. I want to remind everyone these shows are brought to you in coordination with Marcel Reed and the Whistleblower Summit. It's an annual event in Washington, D.C. This year it was presented online because of all this faked up virus stuff. But we got the job done anyway, and it was a grand success. So thanks to everybody who tuned in and sent their comments, their compliments, everything. We do appreciate it. Our guest tonight is a lady named Christina Mundethil, and she's a former, well, she's a veteran, and not former, but still. And in 2004, she suffered two events. One was she was raped while on duty, and the second was she was exposed to burn pits. And if for those of you who know about burn pits, this is a terrible situation. This is such a contaminated, poisonous, toxic smoke and debris coming up off of these things, and it has caused many of our veterans severe problems, including cancer, lung and pulmonary issues, heart issues. These are dangerous things. And if you're wondering what this is where they take equipment that's contaminated with depleted uranium. They take all sorts of munitions, whatever's left over, and they throw it in a hole, no matter what it is, and they set fire to it. And I can't imagine how toxic the emissions off that are. But for now, Christina, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Oh, you bet. I'm sorry it took so long to get to you, Christina. Can you give everybody a little bit of background about the events that took place in 2004 and how we got where we are?
Sure. So I deployed to Balad in 2003. I was part of an aviation company, but I was also junior enlisted. So my MOS was a cook. And when you first deploy, there's really nothing to cook because nothing is there as far as equipment-wise. So they had us doing odd and end jobs. And because of my rank, which was an E3, I got tasked with burning human waste of an entire battalion. So like four or five companies would come and use these wooden facilities that we built that had a metal drum underneath it. And so there would be two of them. And so I didn't have a mask. I was in my 20s. I didn't know any better. And I poured jet fuel on it, and I stirred it, and I burned it. And so I did that for, at least 300 days. So it was time for our company to go home. I didn't even realize I didn't know, I didn't follow politics or health, anything, or policies or anything like that. So I really didn't know, which it was kind of a shock to me. But the commanders, they did know, and but they don't really tell us anything. So I went. Our company got orders that it was time to go home. And I was in Kuwait for about 20 days. And we had finished cleaning everything that was required of us. And our acting commander and sergeant said that we could have the night off. And I was invited to a party by a girl from Truxville. That's like a little area within Camp Air of John in Kuwait.
Okay.
And I went, I just kind of stayed isolated most of the time. And then some soldiers, it was male and female, told me to come on over and, you know, chit chat. So I left my little bench and I went over and I was talking and whatnot, and my attacker was sitting on a Humvee. He was leaning up against it, and there was a bottle that I thought it was water, but it wasn't. It was, I learned many years later that it was Iraqi moonshine. And
oh.
It has high levels, yeah, it has high levels of lead and toxins. So, and I remember that. And then I remember how sick I felt, and I wanted to go home. And so the girl that I came to the party with, I'm like, I want to go home. And she said, it's not time. And she left me. She left me.
Okay.
And then I remember walking, and I know that I was raped by a generator. When I woke up the next morning, I was alone. There was a poncho that lined this bunk area that had been like cornered off. And I was naked and I was in a lot of pain.
Uh-huh.
So I was trying to figure out what happened. I put my clothes on and I walk out, and the tent is all men.
Oh,
like,
my God.
All men. And I went to the latrine, kind of like the same thing we had in Iraq. And I knew something was wrong because when I peed, it burned like putting vinegar on an open cut.
Oh, wow.
And then that's when I started remembering. I went to TMC. And I wanted medical treatment. I didn't trust cops, and I wanted nothing to do with them. And so the next thing I know, the CID agents from the field office in Air of John were talking to the doctors and different things like that. I went through a rape kit. Some of it I remember, some of it I don't. I think they sedated me to finish the rest. And so then I want to say that was on the 1st. So after the rape kit, I wrote a statement to CID. And then in their questions, they asked me about an Article 15 that I got when I was downrange. And when I asked them what did that have to do with rape, they said it goes to the heart of credibility. And I'm like, okay, so I explained it. And then that was that. So he put me in an area that was secure because they didn't know who did it. I had a hard time giving them exact descriptions and whatnot. And so I remember I was working in a bookshop inside this strip mall when the Commanding Sergeant Major from Brigade, so Brigade is over battalion.
Okay.
And he told me that if I ever need anything, just to come to Brigade and that they would handle it, anything that came up. So the next thing I know, CID accused me of making a false statement. they said they had my command bring me back. And when I walked in, this agent said, "We know you lied, make another statement." And I said, "Well, I can add to my statement." And you can see, like, on the statement, it was guided. So then probably 30 days after my assault, I was put out of the military. I was gone.
Oh,
so,
wow.
So, yeah, it's pretty quick. So the Department of Veterans Affairs, they do not like women veterans. They can put on their front and say, "We care about them." They have this woman, Pamela Powers, who says, "Oh, we care about women." But when you go and you look at through the comments and go through LinkedIn and look at the things that women veterans are saying, like, the VA isn't even acknowledging them. And
right.
They're not addressing the problems. And
right.
So I went back to the Army when I was discharged, and I wrote the Army Discharge Review Board, and I told them what happened. And I received a response from them saying, your application is granted. They wrote that the Army, the commanders I had, were violated my rights. Sorry, that's my 5-year-old. So the only thing I'm thinking So I didn't understand at first, like, what was happening.
Right.
But when the Army said,
"Are you okay?"
Yes.
Are you having trouble breathing?
No, I'm okay.
Okay.
So, yeah, my husband is home, but our 5-year-old, she is pretty rambunctious.
Yeah.
Just a little bit.
Okay.
So I didn't.
We've got a caller on here, so why don't we take that call while you settle things down there? Okay?
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Area code 405. Did you have a question or comment?
Yeah, this is Arthur Bean.
Well, Mr. Bean, how you doing?
Sorry about the delay.
Yes.
I got tied up trying to negotiate with a DA.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, we've got Christine Thunderhill on. She's a, and I think we just lost. No, we got you. Okay, go ahead, Christine.
Yes.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah. I don't know what happened there. We lost a caller. But anyway, go ahead with what you were saying. You said they even admitted they had violated your rights. And what happened after that?
Not a damn thing. I don't even mind telling you that. So the Army Discharge Review Board is like, they're not allowed to do that. We're giving you full relief. And so what the weird thing was is the VA refused to take that for 10 years. For 10 years, for 10 years, my discharge stayed as misconduct. So every decision ever made about me was based off of false information.
Oh, my God.
And
this isn't the first time I've heard this either, about them stalling out cases for years on end and then constructing basically what is just a load of crap that they keep adding to this file and putting out and saying, well, see, this happened, or somebody said this, or, you know, but it, and it turns out that none of it has any basis in fact. And it's something they have carefully constructed to marginalize and, you know, denigrate you. So, but go ahead.
I didn't understand the full capacity of just, like, how powerful them setting aside everything
yeah.
that I commanded.
Yeah.
The DA
okay.
is like a circus, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And the veterans, we are the performers.
Right.
And what I mean by that is, I guess they didn't expect this kind of fight from someone like me, but in 2010, the DA took my health care away. I was not given any appeal rights, just a basic violation of, you know, every time the VA denies something, they have to give you appeal rights. If they want to take your health care away, they
yeah.
have to give you appeal rights. During the appeal process, they can't take anything away. The appeal process has to play out. But these people don't follow the law. Congress can pass whatever laws or policies that they want. You can't make these people behave. You can't make them follow the law. And I prove it. So I went 2 years and 2 months with no health care. And during this time, that was my critical window. All
mm-hmm.
the service members that I deployed with, they were getting baseline pulmonary testing, baseline CT scans, and x-rays. But I wasn't a veteran to them, so I wasn't allowed to have it.
Uh-oh.
So, because they denied every service connection request that I asked for. Every single one. And so I can't.
It's okay.
I can't fathom. And I mean, people went to extreme lengths too. There was a
mm-hmm.
lady in Oklahoma City. She called CID Command in Quantico and spoke to a case agent that was very knowledgeable about my case. And they told her that there was no rape, that it was consensual. So when she called me and told me I need to come see her, and I told her, I said, you have to treat me for all injuries related to sexual assault, no matter what. And she came back with that statement saying, well, CID says that there was no rape, it was consensual, so we don't have to treat you. So it was very, very rigid. And
mm-hmm.
but they wouldn't do that with other veterans, which is a complete imbalance and hypocritical.
Right.
So when I finally got health care back, it was like a year after that, they sent me for EEG, and it was abnormal, but they couldn't figure out why. And I got pregnant with Sam in 2014, I think, and I had her in 2015. So when me and my
mm-hmm.
husband moved down to Florida, my health started getting much, much worse. And it started with this 1 week in November where a whole week I was coughing up blood. And
oh,
I didn't
wow.
know why. Because, like, that's never happened to me with a cold bronchitis, like, ever.
Mm-hmm.
And so the VA here, they ordered just a regular x-ray. And they're like, you have moderate to severe damage to your lungs. So then they ordered a CT scan. And so initially, the VA is like, oh, you have asthma. And I'm like, asthma? Okay. And then I continued to get worse. So they found a brainstem lesion in my pawn, which indicated that I had had a minor stroke in my brainstem, which is probably why I struggle so much with my speech. But, I didn't learn that till many years later. Because remember, I wasn't a veteran. So
okay.
The VA would not do MRIs. So they missed it. So a lesion in the brainstem is actually pretty serious. It means that
right.
part of the brain is damaged. And they missed it. Because, you know, I wasn't a veteran. Oh, man, sometimes I just want to punch them in the face. But anyway. So me and Sean are like, we don't think the VA is doing right because they called me a liar for all those years, took my health care away, and now it looks like that they're going to try to cover up their mistakes by downgrading
right.
their health conditions.
Mm-hmm.
So Sean put me on his insurance, and we went to Mayo Clinic. And the last
okay.
time I saw Mayo Clinic, they said, you're going to have to prepare for eventually you're going to need a lung transplant or a lobectomy, or they're going to cut some of your lobes of your lungs off to extend your life.
Oh, my God.
Like, okay. So when it came to my heart, there was abnormalities, but like Orlando VA said that my heart was normal. I was put on a beta blocker by a civilian doctor. And Orlando VA is like, yeah, you don't need that. Your heart's in really good shape. You don't need that. And like a dummy, I listened to them.
Ew.
So then I can't believe I listened to them. So trying to exercise, my heart
yes.
rate would get really, really high, and then it wouldn't come down.
Oh.
And so we went to, so my civilian pulmonologist was like, this is not very good. And so he has been doing my health care as far as my lungs, and he refers me to various physicians based on a problem that comes up. So my echocardiogram, like I've had four done in the past 2 years, and they just keep getting worse. So pulmonary hypertension specialists come in and they're like, we're going to do a right-sided heart cath because what's showing on the echo is way off. And I'm not even old enough to have those kind of problems. So
okay.
we did the right-sided heart cath. The pulmonary pressures were normal. But the right side of my heart, those pressures in the right atrium were not. The left side of my heart, the pressures were off. There's thickening on the right side. No, right on the right side, it's getting narrow on one of the valves, and on the left side, there's thickening because my heart is
okay.
having to eat more just to get blood out. So my pulmonologist is like, okay, so we need to address that, and he had me do some kind of bike test where they put a mask over my face.
Okay.
And you know, I'm really trying. Like, really, really trying. And so when I got the call from the doctor, he's like, you need a cardiologist. And I'm like, well, I don't understand. And he's like, it's called chronotopic incompetence. It's where you are forcing yourself to go faster on the bike, but your heart is not responding. So the METs, that's like how fast I was going. My METs would be at 3 or like 2.3. and the highest my heart would beat is like 107. And that's 52%, which is not very good at all. It's terrible. And
right.
So here's the VA saying, oh, well, there's nothing wrong with you. Oh, okay. Keep saying that.
Okay.
Right? And so all of this, because the VA said I wasn't a veteran, because the cop said I made it up, that I lied.
Well,
and nobody can give me any answers. Not Senator Rubio. Excuse me. So Senator Rubio's office, it's like he doesn't want to get his hands dirty. This is not his family or his daughter, so why should he care? And Senator Scott really does only care about himself. He's greedy, and I don't like him. So I had to call the White House hotline. Like, how many complaints did I make? I made 57 complaints to the White House hotline just to get an answer about my health care. So I'm pretty persistent. So I wrote, I got a call from the Health Eligibility Center in Atlanta. Those are the people that were supposed to terminate the health care, but they didn't. And so she spoke with me at length, and I said, can you put everything you just said to me in writing? And she said, yes. So the VA blamed my health care lapse on an administrative error. The man who did it, his name is Greg. We'll just call him Greg. That Greg didn't understand what my discharge meant. And so you'll find that people that have bad paper, which according to the VA, I had bad paper, they don't want to treat the veterans who have bad paper, and they don't want to treat the veterans fight the system to get the error resolved. So I'm not sure, like, how they can excuse that, because most of the veterans that are coming back that have, like, misconduct or something like that, they're not stateside veterans. These are combat veterans, veterans that are coming back from Iraq, Syria, Afghanistan. And here's the VA saying, oh, well, we don't want to help you. Your service is worthless. And, like, who's going to make them? Nobody's going to make them. And that's my issue. So when the VA kept coming back and they kept saying no for service connection, I wrote the challenge against my own CID investigation. My commander took the investigation that CID gave him, and he put it in my personnel file. And that's how I learned the names of my attacker and the witnesses and everything like that.
So they knew who did this.
Yes.
Holy crap.
So, it is much than this. So I wrote a challenge. I based it. I have no law enforcement training. I don't want to be law enforcement. I just want to be me. So, I wrote gaps in the timeline. Like, there was one witness, the main witness, she's like, that I left at 4 o'clock in the morning. And then you have the alleged rapist saying that he took me like an hour and a half before. And when I spoke to civilian law enforcement that are skilled in sex crimes, they were like, that gap should have been investigated. So what happened from this time to this time? No investigator should ever miss a gap that big. So then the commander, a Captain Joni Ernest, she took statements from the men in the tent. She gave them to CID, and then CID took sworn statements from some of the men, like four, including my attacker. So when I compared the statements, the timeline is messed up. They're writing one thing in the unsworn statement. They're putting something else in the sworn statement. The VA, when they requested my personnel file, they were able to see everything that those men said. And if you're if somebody tells me that that did not influence the VA, I would call them a liar to their face.
Right.
So
yeah,
that influenced them big time. And I saw I wrote George Bush was president at that time, the younger one.
Yeah.
And so this man, this man from Alabama wrote me a letter, and he said that I was kicked out of the Army because I made a statement that I knew that was false and that I was not raped, but it was consensual. And I'm like, okay, so they want to fight about this. I'm going to have to prove my innocence before they're going to help me. So when I wrote the challenge to CID, the commanding general at that time was a female, and she said, wrote a letter on the letterhead saying that I was charged with a crime by investigators that they should have known was illegal. And it took me like a whole month to get that through my thick head. So CID investigators in Kuwait charged me with a crime that they knew was against my constitutional rights. Who stopped
me? Wow.
Nobody.
Wow.
Nobody stopped them. So that charge was unfounded. So I took it to the VA, compensation and pension, and I'm like, okay. They're sorry. They're like, no, I'm sorry. The more serious charge of making a false statement still remains. And I'm like, okay, fine. So at that time, I had spoken to many CID agents, and one of them told me that they knew that my statements were coerced by CID. They had a handwriting expert analyze my statements. And
okay.
They knew I wrote them under duress. And I was like, okay. So I'm like, the VA is saying there's no evidence that shows force. And he's like, that's not necessarily true. So in the mail, about a week or so after this call, I got the disc that shows all the forensic photos that they took. And the VA's like, making a false statement still remains.
Really?
So even though, and I have the CD, I have it with my name on it and my case number on it. And so I went and went head to head with the ID. And I mean, so like my attacker, he was married.
Oh.
He was higher ranking.
Mm-hmm.
And when you read through his statement and compare it against the other statements, he admits to raping me.
Oh,
and
wow.
I told CID, I said, how can you say that probable cause existed that I made a false statement twice, swore to a false statement, and that I was a violation of General Order 1A, which is drinking in a combat zone. It's
okay.
Prohibited. You're not allowed.
Okay.
And so how can you say that I did all those things when clearly he was married? So that's adultery. And I'm like, if you compare the statements, he admits to raping me. But your lawyer said that his only probable cause existed that he was drinking. I said, so tell me how that's legal.
Mm-hmm.
They had no response. So then I went through his criminal background, and he was arrested, and he was in like a county lockup while being Iowa National Guard. And so that's relevant because the National Guard Bureau has rules in place that if a service member on not active duty, but National Guard, Reserves, all those, that if they're arrested, they have to tell their command. And if they plead guilty or found guilty, they have to be put out. So by their own admission, they admit to not following rules and regulations only when they can retaliate against a whistleblower.
Okay.
And so I got into a heated argument with the VBA about that, and I'm like, how can he? So he's service connected. He got a Purple Heart, and he retired. And I asked them, I'm like, how in the hell can he get all that? He's a rapist. And I said, are you aware of this, this, and this? And they're like, if it wasn't in his file when he applied for benefits, then they can't use it against him.
Oh, my God.
So the VBA's official position is if you're accused of a crime and you serve jail time and it's against the regulations for the National Guard or whatever, and then you go to war and come home, if it's not in your file, you know, we're not going to consider it.
Oh.
So that just opened the door wide open for all kinds of crap, right?
Yeah, right.
But if you're a female though, then yeah, we're gonna charge you with all kinds of things, make your life a living hell. Then we'll work with the VA to make sure that you don't get benefits, and by the time you do, it doesn't really matter because you're going to die anyway.
Yeah. Wow. Wow, wow, wow.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard all kinds of things about the VA and how they, the Bozkos case, I don't know if you're familiar with it, but they've been openly threatened. I mean, my God, the things these people have done right out in the public, everybody knows it. They don't make any pretense of trying to hide it, and yet these people still have a job. I want to know how, but this stuff goes on all the time in the VA, and you hear all these stories about people at the VA, they'll get run tests, and maybe the tests show something significantly wrong, but they won't tell the veteran, and they leave this ailment go until it's at critical point. Sean Higgins has been merciless in exposing the Memphis VA, and here this place is still running. And I mean, he has actually, you know, just I think more than 40 times been on the news about the crap that goes on there, and it's still operating like nothing happened. I don't get it. Christina.
Neither do I. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I agree with you 100%.
If they spend their time, I think it would be far more efficient to handle things efficiently in the right way. It would be a money saver, but they're spending an inordinate amount of money trying to bypass regulations and do what they should do.
Yes.
If they would put that much effort into doing the right thing, imagine how much better off veterans would be and how much better this system would run. And why is it allowed to run like this? Why are they allowed to do this to people?
Because there is no one to stop them. That's what I'm saying. They they can have all the policies and regulations that they want, but Congress can't make them. You can't make people follow the law. You can't make them do what's right. And so when I asked for an increase, I was reminded of that when you started bringing up Memphis VA.
Yes.
When they said that I was better. My neurologist.
Okay.
She ran MRI on my entire spine. That they had to do a baseline to see if there are any other lesions, because it could be MS. But MS was ruled out, so we're good. And so at the bottom of my back, sometimes people have herniated disc, but
yes.
My disc on the L spine, they reverse inward at a 5-degree
oh,
angle.
Oh, wow.
And so when the VA wrote me and said, oh, your spine is better. And I thought, I have a 5-degree incline coming into my
yes.
back. You're in my spine, you're telling me. And so the spinal nerve there is moderately compressed.
Right.
So, I mean, it's stupid crap like that. And I'm afraid that the doctors that the VA is using, they are just so underqualified. And
well, Christina,
they have
for years they've said that VA doctors are the bottom of the barrel. They're doctors who can't get work anywhere else because their performance is so poor. They're so bad at their job. And they go to the VA.
Wow. Well, I'm proud to say that all my civilian doctors are the top 1%. They are Harvard or, Vanderbilt, educated. They've done internships
uh-huh.
at the very best of hospitals. They've written research
right.
papers, and they are just the very best at what they do. And I trust them.
Yeah.
And
right.
I mean, when I came to them, they were like, you're in a really big mess. And I'm like, yeah, I am. Can you help me? And they were like, we can try. So
yeah.
This year, at the beginning of the year, I got pneumonia on my right side of my lung. And he discovered it by doing a bronchoscopy. And then after I finished the antibiotics for the pneumonia on the right side, I was having a CT scan to make sure that it was gone. And they found a pleural effusion. And
yeah.
so I had to get
wow.
more antibiotics. And I thought, if I had been at the VA, that it would have killed me because they wouldn't listen.
Right. Right.
So, I mean... my pulmonologist, all of my doctors know that I don't have asthma. They know it's constrictive bronchiolitis. You can see the webbing inside of my lungs, the air trapping, ground glass, opacities. I mean, it's a mess. But
yeah.
they do a really good job.
Yeah. I'm glad to hear that. I'm glad you got relief somewhere and at least some honest answers, even if it wasn't the answers you would have liked to have had. You know, it's they keep talking, Christina, about privatizing the VA. It's already privatized. People just don't know it. And but I guess they want to bring it out into the open. And what that means is people who stand to make money. The reason the VA runs the way it does is because it is run by private corporations, and they can do whatever they want to do. When you said that about nobody can make them do anything, nobody can make them follow the law, one of the first examples I ever saw of just how true this is was here 2 years ago. People were screaming at the House of Representatives to order the FDA to do something or another. And this representative stood up and said, we can advise them, but we can't make them do anything. And it's because they are a privately owned corporation. And the VA is the same way. They're contracted to the federal government as a governmental services corporation. But the VA is not owned by the federal government. And it is not operated by the federal government. And you've got all these medical suppliers in there. You got everybody in there getting a piece of the pie. But it basically runs, no matter what the regulations are, it just runs wide open, and the money is squandered. I've, honest to God, I've never heard in all of the dealings with government and everything I do, the waste, just the monetary waste at the VA is staggering. And even when all of these things are pointed out about the egregious care our veterans are getting, or people in your situation where they've contrived and fabricated this thing to make it look different than what it was, even when it's shown to them, put right in their face, nothing changes. Nothing changes.
Absolutely. And when I fought against CID, it was one of the nastiest fights I have ever been in my whole life.
Wow.
They had analysts. I mean, they had analysts that would openly attack me and just unprofessional. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we're going back and forth. So it came to a head when I went to the ABCMR. It was my third attempt. First time it was denied. The second time I pulled away because I felt like they cannot be impartial.
Yeah.
And so the third time I asked them to open a case, it was in 2016. And I waited, and then I learned how sick I was. And I'm like, I kept talking to my case manager, and I'm like, I need them to make a decision, yes or no. And so it went back and forth between me and them till the end. So they had a psychologist. They had a psychologist from the Army that worked for the Army Board of Correction and Military Records. That's what the ABCMR is. I got to write a statement back. And so at the end of the day, Secretary of Defense Esper, he was the Secretary of the Army at that time. He ordered the CID Community General to unfound making a false statement.
Okay.
So I was finally cleared. It took 15 years.
They finally cleared you after 15 years?
After 15 years.
Wow.
And
did they give you your back pay?
No. When I took it to Secretary Wilkie and I took it to Pamela Powers and another long list of people at the central office, they seemed so sincere at first, right? They're like,
they were.
Let's just see what we can get done for you, honey, to make you whole, to correct this injustice.
Oh,
it's going to be okay. You know, we got you. And then they're like, shut the door on my face.
You're about to make me cry. Yeah.
And they're like, I'm like, then all of a sudden, they're not answering my calls anymore. So I'm doing things through my computer to change my number to see if they really hate me. And yeah, they really hate me. If they didn't think it was my number, they would answer. I'm such a jerk. But when I would use my number, they wouldn't answer. And it was funny. It got kind of comical towards the end. Like, I would be sending them emails from my email address. And so I have over 15 different email accounts. And I use them for various things. And so I emailed Secretary Wilkie and Pamela Powers through an email address that they didn't know I had. And I want you to know I got a response in 4 minutes.
Oh, my gosh.
I did it quick. I took a screenshot of the email, and then I took a screenshot that they had actually responded, because the government has the ability to retract the email they send you.
Right.
So it'll look like they never sent it to you. Okay.
Yep.
So then I went back to my Gmail account and I sent them all this, and I'm like, oh, so you really don't like me. You're ignoring me, and you'll respond to me if you think I'm someone else.
Uh-huh.
And then it was like after that, it was just like, if they do something good, then I'll say it. But when I filed for our earlier effective date, the VA, the central office, said that I needed to get over it, that I needed to move on.
Oh.
That it didn't matter anymore. Yes, the hell, it does freaking matter. You took 15 years of my life. You didn't give me health care. Then you blame me. And then I went through additional hoops that I didn't even have to go through. They should have taken the discharge correction. It was not an upgrade. So an upgrade is a DD-215. Mine was a correction that went back from the day that I left the Army. That is significant. So freaking significant. But they wouldn't take it. They wouldn't take it. They used authority and judgment that they didn't have. And so now they're telling me, you better be glad to have what you have. Excuse me?
Oh.
You know how many times me and my kids were homeless?
Oh, God, I hate to hear that.
Or how many medical bills that I have that I had to pay because you told me I wasn't a veteran and I couldn't get health care? Or the really juicy part is that they said, you can't have health care, but we would like to put you in a study for a traumatic brain injury, even though we said you don't have a traumatic brain injury. And then when I make phone calls, I found out that Oklahoma City VA got $5,000 a head for each veteran that they put in the study. So for the purpose of being medical, no, I have all the documentation. Dealing with the government, I know to never say anything that I can't back up.
There you go, girl.
So I have all the paperwork. So they put me in a study to get money off of me. But when I ask for health care, you're not a veteran.
Oh.
So, but I should just, you know, get on and get over it because, you know, y'all just really recognize the sort of damage that you've done. Right?
Good Lord.
Well, he's a coward.
This is just...
He's a coward, and I don't believe that he has the audacity or even the courage to face me, face to face.
Oh, he won't face anybody. You know, he hides behind that office door. Yeah,
and the thing is that there's like a Women Veterans Summit. I want you to know that pasty-faced jerk sat there long enough to get his ugly face on the TV, and then when they took another picture of Pamela Power sitting there, his butt was gone.
Oh, wow.
Oh, but he cares about women veterans. I caught that crap in a heartbeat.
Yeah. Wow. We've got about 5 minutes here left, Christina, and I'm going to want to do a follow-up show with you because there's way more to this story than you got out this evening, and I'm going to have a lot of questions to ask, and I'm still trying to figure out, okay, so they cleared you and supposedly made everything right, but they didn't give you any of your back pay?
No.
Or are you considered a veteran now?
I am now, but it's all too late for that, isn't it?
Yeah. A few days late on that one, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Jiminy Christmas. And you said, and I included in the promo, that you'd written to Senators Rubio and Senator Scott, and you got no help from them whatsoever.
Nope.
Wow, Christmas. And, you know, that's the thing in every issue that I deal with, Christina. You got these senators, representatives, these government agency heads. You got, you know, this one, that one. And it's always, you know, get in touch with us. Get in touch. We want to hear from you. If you have a problem, we need to know about. And they don't want to know anything. They don't want to know anything. And they will swear and be damned you never told them anything. or it was an isolated incident and it didn't happen to anybody else. Why, they
what
never heard
crock.
Of such a thing before.
Oh,
yeah,
isolated.
No,
yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it is too. And every one of them are like that. I don't care who you're talking to. If it's not politically expedient for them to deal with something, or like in your case where it's really a hot button case. And one of the things I do know with the military, they're trying to hide and cover up the rapes that occur, which are quite large in number. And, you know, we've got a problem there. And one of the things I heard, and I don't know if you experienced this or not, but I have talked to other female veterans who said that when they were stationed overseas, like Iraq, Afghanistan, so on, that in the barracks they were in, you know, the camp they were in, they were put in tents with men.
Yes.
And that they had to use the same showers and the bathrooms, everything.
Yes, that is true. So, and their stalls, we had to do that in Balad. We finally got a shower trailer. It's like a black thing over it. We have to fill it up. And the water gets too hot by the afternoon, so you better get in there first thing or late at night.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, yeah, there's showers. There's like maybe 8 of them. And you get in, take a shower, but there's a wall. You can't see the other person.
Uh-huh.
I never had any problems when I was in Balad. I took showers with males, whatnot. We got attacked. In the freaking shower and running out, trying to get some sort of clothes on, half naked, running up the hill. I never had any problems. But yeah, she's telling the truth. Yeah.
I'll be darned.
Yep.
Something that never crossed my mind before to even think about it, you know, consider it. Just until I heard that and I thought, whoa, you know, I hadn't considered that would actually happen. But anyway, we've just got 2 minutes here and I got to close this down. I want to thank you for coming on, and I am going to want to talk with you again because I know there's more to this story and I want to get it out there for you and see what we can do to help you. And I'll get a hold of some veterans groups that I have some connections to and see if we can't get something done for you, get some kind of relief. And this just makes me sick. Just makes me sick. But anyway, Christina, thank you for coming on tonight. And I hope we didn't tax you too much. I know you have trouble with your breathing and everything. And I was concerned about that. But we will revisit this, okay?
Okay.
All right. And everyone, thank you for tuning in. We had a full board, so I know there was a bunch of you. And if you got any thoughts or comments about this, you can Facebook me, message me on Facebook and let me know. If you got any ideas that might help Christina or you just want to lend support, she's on Facebook too. And but just, you know, keep these things in mind. They try to paint military service like it's the grand poobah. It isn't. It's a tough ride no matter which way you go. And then for these people to come home and be treated like they are just as disgusting. But we'll be back tomorrow night with In the Mix with me and Kaz, Marcia Joyner from Hospice, and whoever else falls in the door. We're going to be talking about the video we did for the summit, which was quite successful, and a few other things that have crossed our radar this last week. So thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Christina, thank you so much for taking the time. And we will be back tomorrow night, everyone. And good night.
Good night. Thank you.